Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee will come to order on Monday, April 12th, 3 o'clock. Representative Hansen, we're on House File 2882, and we have completed subdivisions 1, 2, and 3, and we're going in for the wetlands. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We are on page 6, if you're following along in the bill, and if you're following along in the summary of the bill, we're on page 8. So wetlands, accelerated shallow lake and wetland enhancement and restoration program. So that's $6.5 million in 05 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to assess, enhance, and restore shallow lake and wetland habitats. It'll be working with the Ducks Unlimited. This would restore 63 acres, acquire 750 acres, 720 of them would be in fee, 30 in easement, and enhance 7,000 acres. This location statewide. Managers are DNR and Ducks Unlimited. Personnel, 1.5 million. Contracts, 1.7 million. Acquisition, 2.6. And these are rough figures, of which 165,000 is easements and 2.5 is fee. Pilt liability, 18,000 to 21,000. In-hand leverage, 50,000. The source being a DNR staff. I do want to make a comment about this particular subdivision, and I think, Bill, the summary of this is the latest information, or is this the information as it was in the board?
This is the latest information.
Yeah. This this proposal or this project was one of the reasons why I had abstained on voting for the amendment, because it had in the original proposal, as we voted, a provision where there would be a purchase of land that was already in the public domain. A watershed district had owned 80 acres. What has happened since that time is that the project managers and the staff have met the Board of Water and Soil Resources and are looking at ways of accomplishing the project without having the acquisition be land that was already paid for by taxpayers. Bill, if you can.
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, Bill Becker, staff to the Sarge Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. It's been a longstanding policy, as I understand it, to not use public money to buy public land, if at all possible, to avoid it. And the Watershed District had purchased the land in question for the purposes of flood control and habitat, and not for investment or anything like that. The Ducks Unlimited has agreed with the Watershed District to the basics of a management scheme for the flooded property that works for both parties involved, and they're using the additional funds that are available for acquisition to acquire more of the basin, and my recollection is that that will be a WMA open to public hunting around this particular shallow lake. And the name of the lake is Moonshine Lake.
This is Moonshine Lake. And who is going to do the acquisition then? Ducks Unlimited?
Madam Chair, Ducks Unlimited along with DNR.
Representative Brown.
Are there any other areas in the recommendations that would possibly include a situation like this where we're talking about acquiring easements or land that is already publicly owned?
Madam Chair, Representative Brown, no.
Does the Outdoor Heritage Council have a position on a situation like this, a policy decision? Have they made a policy decision on issues like this in the future?
Madam Chair, would you like to answer that question?
Chairman Kilgore.
Madam Chair, Mike Kilgore, Chair of the LaSalle Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. We don't have a blanket policy that would apply, but we take each situation on a case-by-case basis. In this situation, we were informed that the project probably could not get taken care of without that parcel. And so it was a question of whether the restoration work would have been accomplished at all had that parcel not been acquired. But since that time, the DNR and DU had worked with the Watershed District on an agreement so that they would allow it not only for flood control but also for wildlife habitat. So the conditions have changed so that the project can move forward without acquiring it. But the answer to your question is we take each of these up on a case-by-case basis, weighing the merits of whether the project could be accomplished absent that provision of the project.
Chairman Kilgore, would you have gone into the discussions further had not one of the commissioners voted no or abstained from the vote on that issue?
Mr. Madam Chair, members, yes, because this issue had generated a fair amount of discussion in absence of just looking at the abstention of the vote, of this particular vote. We had talked about this, and of course staff and certain council members have talked quite a bit about this project.
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, as I think back about this, I can recall that the chair at the time indicated to the council that this had to be resolved before we could approve an accomplishment plan, thus making the money available for expenditure. So this was one of the items that was on the checklist to be cleared up on this particular project.
But Chairman Kilgore, you're still going to go forward with a case-by-case resolution of similar issues in the future.
Madam Chair and members, you know, we're funding program capacity. That said, Mr. Becker pointed out, an accomplishment plan has to be presented to the council and approved by the council before a dollar is spent. And it's at that point where we get into the details of each of the programs in terms of the accomplishments. If there are issues like this that come forward, that we talk about them. But we try, as a council, when we're looking at making recommendations to you, unless an issue like this does come up, we're focusing on building program capacity with the follow-up details of being dealt with in the accomplishment plan.
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, I want to add to that with regard to taking these up one case at a time. Specifically, this was a situation where the watershed district would not be harmed by the flooding of the land. That's what they had acquired the public land for, was the dual purposes of flooding and habitat. It so happens that when they acquired it, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was involved. They later dropped out of the project because of monetary reasons, I believe it was. So what the reason for taking this on a case-by-case basis is you may have a public entity that spent public money for a purpose other than wildlife, flood control, and things like that, where the local unit of government or the other unit of government would actually be out something, would not be made whole by flooding their property or using it as the habitat project that in question would use it. So that's the reason for taking them one case at a time, to get the details, make sure that everyone's whole in the end, and proceeding on that basis.
Chairman Kilgore, can I go back to your talking about the accomplishment plan that you submit? But do you have the accomplishment plan for all the projects before you vote on the recommendation to give to us?
Madam Chair and members, yes. But that said, that accomplishment plan would often be modified, particularly if, for example, we're funding a program that has a list of projects. That list might change somewhat due to a change in status of the seller, whatever, between the time the proposal is submitted, in this case last fall, and when the accomplishment plans are revisited by the council with much greater detail in terms of budget and so forth in May and June of this year. But yes, we see that information when the proposals are reviewed by the council. We have a lot of discussion as a council with every proposal presenter about these very same issues.
And Chair Kilgore, then how will you, when you make amendments to your accomplishment plans, as you go into them more in detail and you make changes to them, how will you notify us?
Madam Chair, we have only gone through this process once, so we don't have a formal notification process in place. All of our accomplishment plans are public record. They're on our website. We would be happy to share them with you and the members of the committee if you so desire. We can work with staff to have that arranged.
And Madam Chair, they're all chronicled in the minutes of the council.
But I think when an accomplishment plan has an amendment and we have taken action in some way on accepting your accomplishment plan through the accepting the appropriation, I think we should have notification that it has been changed. Mr. Chairman Kilgore.
Madam Chair and members, just to clarify, the changes to the accomplishment plans, at least for the first year, I can think of no instances where the substance of what had been proposed had changed. What might have changed is the allocation of the budget amount. For example, on the wildlife management area acquisition, there might have been a list of projects to choose from, and then the final accomplishment plan had a list of projects. But to my recollection, there was never a change in the substance of a restoration of, let's say, five shallow lakes or, you know, burning of native prairies or whatever that might be.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
We'll make a special effort to make sure you all understand what things we have. What amendments we have approved.
Or at least the notification that there's been a change.
Yes, not that the nature of the appropriation has changed.
Right.
That the means of achieving the nature of the appropriation has been modified.
Now, one more thing for my clarification. Now, so you worked it out. And the original purpose then was for the acquisition changed so that it could be used for flood control and wildlife.
Madam Chair, the initial acquisition was for flood control and wildlife. The agreement that was worked out was for flood control and wildlife. No one's changed their mind. It's just that the state isn't paying twice for that property.
Good. But now you're able to buy, did you say 80,000 additional acres in that area to this? Did you add acreage to the original idea that you had on the project? We were talking about an additional 80,000 acres in there, I thought.
Madam Chair, just to clarify, it wasn't 80,000, it might have been 80 acres. If I said 80,000, that would be very gross error.
You know, I have trouble with my numbers, with my zeros.
So significant zeros.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
My recollection is that the acreage goes, is about the same as it was before. It's just different sellers in the basin, adjacent to the publicly owned land, I believe. So you have the shallow lake, and you have the surrounding property that drains into the shallow lake. It's important that the project have the rights to the bottom of the lake as it refills and changes its shape and things like that. But this fact that we're not buying the already public land frees up enough money to buy additional land adjacent to the shore of the shallow lake that will become wildlife management area. And it's 720 acres is my information, 270 acres of lake bed and 450 acres of upland.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Representative Hansen.
I think this is an example of the value of taking time to review proposals, and that since the vote, the people who work on these projects, the managers, the agencies, and that came together and looked at a different way of doing this. You asked earlier of how will people know, or how will the legislature know, and that's part of the responsibility for the legislative members on the council, both in the Senate and the House, that if there are things that are going to be a problem here, it's our responsibility to raise them, whether folks want to hear them or not. And it's also our responsibility to bring items back to the group, to the legislature, whether the legislature wants to hear them or not. Part of our responsibility on being on the council is to carry information back and forth and raise concerns like this one. And I anticipated that this would be a concern, purchasing land that it's already been owned by the, already been purchased by the public. It's now been resolved. I think it's an example of people working together to come to a solution on the project, and it can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, I like the bill, except I'm going to take Phyllis Kahn's, Representative Kahn's place today with words. Madam Chair, if you go to page 19 to start with, the last three lines, it talks about appropriations. With the appropriation, without the prior review and approval of the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council or its successor. The problem I have here is I don't think the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council can pass law, and I don't know that its successor can pass law. So I think somewhere in there it should say legislative approval, and not you, the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council certainly could recommend, but it has to say legislative approval. But then going back through the bill, and I've only had a couple of minutes, I found seven times, not counting that last page, where it says, I'll example page 4, lines 34 and 35. An agreement with the Minnesota Land Trust or its successor. And it says that in many places. Who is the successor, and why isn't there legislative approval that the successor is adequate, able? We can't just hand this off and pass this bill and then say somebody can come in and succeed someone else and then they've got it. And I know you've got great minutes, and I know we talk well here and we keep minutes, and we have a journal on the House floor, but what this says when the governor signs it is what counts, not what we say in this room, not what you said in your minutes, what's in here. And if it says successor, it could be China. That's a successor. We have to change that, Madam Chair. I just don't think this is right. And I don't have the wordsmithing ability of Representative Kahn, but I think we could say, or its successor approved by the legislature, something like that, with legislative approval from the authorized committees. Otherwise, I like the bill. It's just you've got to somehow wordsmith. And again, I found it in seven or eight places. There might be more. I'll stop and see what you think.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Kahn, I didn't even see you there. I'm sorry. I would have let you do that.
Representative Kahn.
Well, let me say, first of all, I think the language or its successor is classic wordsmithing, legal wordsmithing. But I think the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council is defined in legislature, and its success in legislature means successor would only be defined in legislature. For example, maybe it would decide to give it to some other unit of government, but that wouldn't be something that just passed it on. But I think that's standard language that we use when we have something that, you know, isn't constitutionally existed. The law guys can help us with that. And the other issue is, what this looks like a little bit to me, and I'm not sure what language you use for that, is on LCMR or LCCMR, whatever it is now. There are work plans, and there are revisions to work plans that sometimes So the legislature's passed, you know, the appropriation, and then a work plan comes in, and then there are revisions to the work plan. Well, the legislature doesn't need to see those. Every once in a while, because of some way in which the language and statute was crafted, the legislature does, and the work plan changes enough. This is going in the past. The work plan changed enough that the legislature did have to change the language. And then they had to come back to the legislature to do it. I'm not sure you want every one of these dealt with in law, but you do want if we pass something in statute, you do want some review of a change in the work plan. The question is, does the legislature have to do it? Not unless it was that specific in statute, so that it contradicts with the statute. And, you know, again, there's a lot of 40 years or whatever it is of doing this with LCMR, so I think they know how to write. I don't know if this is written right or not, but I think they know how to write it. But its successor, I'd ask either Mark or Pat.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Representative House.
Representative Kahn, I agree with you a little bit, but if you go to page 6, just as an example on line 20, the line before that says pheasants forever or its successor to acquire interests in land. So that means the DNR is going to give pheasants forever or its successor money to acquire interest in land. That's not a work plan. That's purchasing land. I agree, a work plan is something we don't have to meddle with, but a lot of these or its successor are for acquiring easements or acquiring land. Yeah. So wherever it fits where you're acquiring property, that we have to have legislative approval if it changes hands. I agree with you on the work plans. We don't need to meddle with the work plans. But wherever land transfers or money exchanges hands, if the person getting the money is a different person, then we have to approve that.
Madam Chairman, you know, I focused on the Lasard Sams Council because that's set up by legislature, so you wouldn't have a legislation, so you wouldn't. But these two, that is a little bit different because peasants forever, we don't know. You know, maybe their successor would be.
Well, Madam Chair, you remember what happened with the Minnesota Waterfall Association.
Right.
It was a little fishy.
Yeah, so I think that is.
So maybe just Hansen.
A wordsmither. Madam Chair and Representative Howes, maybe to give some idea of what we were trying to do here is when the bill was heard last, we had to do a little technical amendment because the Minnesota Conservation Corps had changed their name to the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. And so rather than having to do that every time, you know, if the Land Trust Board of Directors decided to change their name to Larry's Land Trust, you know, rather than having to go back and write that statute, our staff had said, let's have it. So that's maybe we weren't artful in that, but I think that's the revision of rather than having to go back and be correcting each of these entities, I mean, the entities that are involved here, if they did change, there's going to have to be some notification going on, and maybe our staff can help us with that. But that was the intent, trying to resolve that type of a problem.
Madam Chair,
Representative Hobbs.
That sort of makes sense, but if you've got rid of its successor and Ducks Unlimited changed its name, the Attorney General could maybe even rule on that without legislative authority, but it's too broad. It's just, you can't. Madam Chair, am I wrong? I just don't think we can. If success, that's too vague.
Mr. McCormick. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair,
Ms.
members.
Taylor.
I do think this is, I think it's really a policy decision that Representative Howes has raised for you. I don't think it's a technical wordsmithing decision. I think, you know, you probably need to decide if you want to give the authority to a group like this to have a successor that may not be real clear what the successor is. And I'm not sure we can wordsmith the difference between an organization changing its name, like the Humanities Commission becoming the Humanities Center when it was the same organization, and an organization that substantially undergoes a completely different corporate structure. So I think we may want to think, and I'd be happy to talk to Representative Hansen, Mr. Kilgore, and Mr. Becker to try to see if there's a way that we can approach this. I think I understand the concern, but I don't think this is just a technical wording thing. I think as Representative Hollis pointed out, I think it's a bigger issue.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, to that point, I think my guess would be after the word successor to its successor approved by the legislature to acquire.
Pending legislative approval?
No, just approved by the legislature. That means we have to vote on it.
On the successor?
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Becker?
We would be more than happy to work with Mr. Shepherd and Representative Hollis to make sure that this is worked out.
Thank you.
To a satisfactory conclusion.
That's fine by me.
I think it's a point that we should work on. Continuing on, any other points, any other comments on the Moonshine Lake? Sounds kind of fun, doesn't it?
Okay, on the bill, 7.25, accelerate the waterfall production area program in Minnesota. And that's on 9 on your summary. That would restore 700 acres, acquire 700 acres in fee title. Location is western and southern Minnesota, $3.5 million to the DNR for an agreement with Pheasants Forever or successor in cooperation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Ducks Unlimited. Personnel, 34,000, contracts, 205,000, 2.6 million in acquisition, of which that is all fee. PILT liability, zero. In-hand leverage, 2.5 million. Source from a PF and the federal duck stamp funds. Anticipated leverage, 375,000. No estate tails. I believe we have someone from Fish and Wildlife here if anyone did have questions on that. And I think there were folks available on the previous section if after the committee or later people wanted to ask them questions. Okay, on next would be the Reinvest in Minnesota program, lines 8.5 through 8.19 or 18. This is 6.895 million in fiscal year 2010 to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to acquire permanent conservation easements to restore wetlands and associated uplands in cooperation with the USDA Wetland Reserve Program. So this is an anticipated 4,600 acres of easements, and it would involve western and southwestern Minnesota. Managers, the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Personnel, 332,000, contracts, 228,000, acquisition, 5.5 million, zero PILT cost, in-hand leverage, 9.6 million, and I think that has been changed, that there's been some activity lately with Bowser and NRCS moving to, instead of $1.4 to $1.6 for every dollar invested, so there's a greater capacity now based on some action that has been taken. So in your book it says 1.4. I believe Mr. Lyons is nodding his head. That's 1.6. And then this would be in the Metropolitan Urbanizing section, Forest and Prairie section, and in the Prairie section. Next we go. That's it for...
Wait. Hold up. Representative Morgan.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Dr. Kilgore, I want to read to you a portion of the constitutional amendment passed by the voters of the state. It says, the dedicated money under this section must supplement traditional sources of funding for these purposes and may not be used as a substitute. We are talking about the substitute, supplement, supplant, supplement issue that we've been working on since we convened last January. Would you consider the bonding bill to be a traditional source of funding for RIM?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, yes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Dr. Kilgore. I think most people would. I appreciate that. We have a situation where Representative Hausman and Senator Lanxess bonding bills, a significant portion of funding was line item vetoed, including funding for RIM. I don't remember what the number was. I don't know. $25 million. Thank you, Representative Hausman. And here we are funding RIM. Can you help me philosophically get through this as it relates to the language of the Constitution, Dr. Kilgore?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I'll give it my best.
Thank you.
One of the things that, as a council, we talked about before we made any recommendations to you is that whatever we recommend, going back to the Constitution, needs to be, if there is a traditional source or sources of funding, that this is the add-on. This is the incremental amount of money above and beyond what is normally funded over time. Obviously, with things like bonding, we know that that's not the case. So in all of our deliberations and to our best of our ability, the recommendations before you are, is if it is a program that has a history of traditional sources of funding, the amount that we're recommending would be in addition to what we would consider base funding, for example, whatever that might be. Now, obviously, our recommendations were made to you in January before Representative Hausman's bill was put together and before the actions of the governor to veto that part of the language. So, you know, had we known now, then what we know now, obviously it might be different. But of course, our intent, and I guess our context for this recommendation was that roughly $8 million for $7 million, excuse me, for the WRP RIM would be in addition to what would otherwise be funded through a variety. It could be bonding, might be general fund, it could be LCCMR, whatever it might be.
Chairman Kilgore, in your earlier discussions, you were talking about the money being in addition to, and does that also include in the addition to that the bonding, the Minnesota bonding bill would acquire as with federal funds matching it?
Madam Chair and members, yes, we were certainly well aware of the match opportunity that existed, and we had presentations on obviously all the proposals, including Mr. Lyons from Bowser, about the opportunities for the federal match.
And so we don't have that initial $25 million plus the $35 million. So if this committee recommends, accepts your recommendation of $7 million for RIM, how can we say we're not supplanting?
Madam Chair, if you buy into the fact that our recommendations were the added amount, that and the timing of our decisions were such that we did not have a bonding bill, we did not have any other decisions made about the funding, I think that in itself is a justification that this, as we viewed it, was above and beyond traditional sources of funding. That's at least how the council viewed it this past fall when we were putting together our recommendations to you.
But it's not turning out to be the above and the beyond. It's turning out to be the instead. Mm-hmm. Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, Dr. Kilgore, and members, I think that's exactly the situation that the constitutional language was written to not allow. They did not want a governor and a legislature to look and see, well, we're taking all this from the RIM fund, we're taking this money from the legacy fund. Therefore, we can now save it from our regular budget, and we don't have to. I think supplanting doesn't really, your intentions were correct, and the legislature's intentions were correct, but it was interfered with the governor's veto. But I think when you consider that passing a law is a product of both the legislature and the governor, I don't see how you cannot, you know, this is, I think, one of the textbook cases of supplanting that we looked at when we said we didn't want supplanting to happen because of this fund. As it occurred, I mean, because it doesn't matter whether you look at it before or you look at it afterwards. It's still somebody said, what, well, you know, maybe they didn't even say it, they did it for another reason, but they said this big chunk of money is coming from the legacy fund, therefore we don't need to do it from our traditional source.
Madam Chairman and Representative Kahn, I certainly understand your perspective, and I suspect if you polled members in the room, you'd find all, as many people, as many different perspectives as there are people. That's certainly one way to look at it, and certainly very justifiable.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kilgore, I appreciate your explanation, and I appreciate the position the council was in when you were putting this bill together, that you did not know what would happen with the bonding bill and the traditional sources of funding. And I guess I'm willing to give you the benefit of that doubt and lay some weight to your recommendations based on your perspective. I, of course, am not a representative of one of the projects that did not get funding, because this one did. And I guess it remains to be seen what action they may take as a result of this. But I think it does is, as we move into the future, I think folks who are making these decisions everywhere need to be very careful about this constitutional language and what is being put at risk based on the decisions that are being made for one reason or another. So I appreciate the recommendation. I will support it based on your explanation. I hope others will too.
Thank you, Representative Morgan.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I think at some point we have to get a firm definition of the role of a bonding bill. I mean, it's a bonding bill is not ongoing base appropriation. And so I think a lot of what we've been talking about hinges on that. And so at some point I think we need to get a legal definition or somewhere an explanation of how we are going to determine bonding bills in the future.
Representative Erdahl, my memory of the bonding bill, since the RIM bill was originally passed, we've always had RIM funding in the bonding bill. Mm-hmm. Not the same amounts in every time, but since the beginning, RIM was funded.
Yes, Madam Chair, I understand that you can make an argument that traditionally it's been there. But, you know, the amounts vary, and what I'm just saying is that, you know, technically it's not it is not a baseline funding, and maybe at some point we need to get that verified as to how we determine it in the future.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, maybe to put a couple of other twists into this, just that we did pass, Representative Hausman, there was a bill in 2009 where we did appropriate, and the governor did sign $500,000 for RIM funding in this session. So there was an appropriation of bonding that did occur. I think the challenge that you're having, you know, is what we've heard in multiple committees throughout the session in the House. Having levels of bonding at a percentage level, some interest groups describing a percentage level, some interest groups describing a line item level. How many years do you go back? What is the amount? And if I remember last fall, with council's discussion about substitution and supplant, the record on the floor and the record in committees on prior to the passage of the constitutional amendment was somewhat thin. And so here we are now trying to make appropriations, and there are a wide variety of interest groups that have a wide variety of opinions on what should be done. The fact where we're at right now is we have $6.8 million in this recommendation that was developed by the council based on the input from the agencies, recognizing at that time a 1.4 match. I offered, and Representative Hausman has in the bill, passed a bill of $25 million that would bring in $35 million. Now that number is higher. $25 million would bring in more. So as the days tick by, either there's another bill or there's other action, but I think those opportunities as well are thin. And so then we have to come back to the merits of the project, and the project has merit. And I think was proposed prior to these actions. During the debates on, or the discussions that occur on substitution or supplant, I think most people were looking at the legislature as having the problem, that the legislature would be substituting. I don't think people anticipated the veto. And I know particularly for this project, most of the people in this room did not anticipate a veto. And so here we are a month later trying to figure out what to do. I wouldn't want to lose the wetland restoration dollars and the opportunity we have in the bill. But I think that these issues are very important, and we're going to be struggling with them over the next 25 years, so we'll have to figure it out.
I agree with you, Representative Hansen, and we have to remember our, you know, decide on our role. Going back to your first comments about the interest groups with the percentages, that is a new phenomenon in the last 2 or 3 years. I don't remember. In my experience with the bonding bills, only goes back to the early 90s, but of working on the bonding bills. But it was especially prominent this year in the percentages that we need this much in the bonding bill in order to get. And I suspect that that's part of because of what the Constitution said about supplanting for these other projects. But like you say, the bonding bill is an ever-changing thing. And as Representative Erdahl said, the bonding bill, for various reasons, from time to time, have different emphases on things. And to continually think that something has to have a baseline percentage in the bonding bill at the risk of other important statewide projects. Would be a parameter that is too rigid, I think. I think each bonding bill has its own life and its own purposes and to meet the state needs and for all kinds of reasons. And so for anyone to think that certain interest groups, so to speak, should have a baseline percentage is really wishful thinking. But we do have to think about this. And people that are out there looking for raiders of the Outdoor Heritage Funds, I would think that they would be talking about this raid. This is one that none of us had been anticipating. And seems to me like we're supplanting $7 million for the above and beyond of the $25 million and the $35 million. But how do you go about then, Chairman Kilgore, Mr. Becker, of getting the federal matching funds for the $7 million?
Madam Chair, that's a responsibility of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, who has arrangements with the NRCS to select the projects based on criteria and to apply the money, both federal and state, on the basis of the most important project first.
And Mr. Becker, Mr. Kilgore, if we endorse this appropriation recommendation, then are you prepared to make your case based on what you said, the letter to the governor, and to the fact that you made your recommendations in January before the Bonnie Bill was passed in a lawsuit? Are you prepared, or are you preparing yourself to defend this as a just appropriation rather than a supplanting appropriation?
Madam Chair and members, I would certainly be, as I indicated to Representative Morgan, our thought process is our thought process, and I would be happy to convey that in writing if you so choose. But that's the deliberation, that's the context for our deliberations last fall, and that's simply how we operated. And that's just a fact.
And Madam Chair?
Mr. Becker.
Our communications of our recommendations to the governor on January the 15th, as well as to the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate, made it clear that these were in anticipation of the normal process being followed, and that they were a priori recommendations that were in front of any other decisions being made.
Mr. Kilgore, not as if I choose, but if somebody chooses, I certainly wouldn't bring it to a lawsuit, but I would think somebody might. Any other comments on the accelerated, wetlands program? Just, can you clarify for me? The differences in the personnel on these programs, of the amounts of money for personnel on these programs. One is $35,000, one is $1.5 million. For basically, one is restoring and protecting 700 acres, and the other one's about 780 acres.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Generally speaking, the personnel reflect the complexity of the project and the variety of the project. Remember, some of these projects restore and enhance and acquire as well. Others are just acquisition. Restoring and enhancing requires more on-the-ground oversight, supervision, as well as personnel to do the actual restoration. So I think that's where you find most of the difference.
So we're paying personnel also for the acquisition of the land, not just the protecting and the enhancing and the restoring?
Madam Chair, yes. Acquisition requires administration. It requires appraisals. It requires lawyerly work. So that's what we would be paying for with an acquisition. My fellow members here also remind me that in a program like the Shallow Lakes program, it's completing shallow lake restorations, but it's also assessing and looking at future potential shallow lakes, and that requires a lot of technical work in terms of engineering, surveying, and those sorts of activities. So the personnel is really a reflection of the complexity of the project before you, the program before you. And the more complex ones generally have more personnel.
And Do I assume then that the complex, more complex programs that are you protecting the resource that the protection part is also the acquisition part?
Madam Chair, the protection is largely the acquisition part. There is direct funds, direct effort involved in acquisition. In some of these, there is indirect effort that may be on a project basis. I shouldn't use the word indirect. It's more the technical appraisal, assessment of where future projects ought to go. It's an investment in future capacity.
Please continue, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've been through prairies, forests, wetlands, and now the habitat. So on line, on page 8, line 8.20, the Metro Big Rivers Habitat Program, $2.397 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for agreements for projects to protect, restore, and enhance natural systems in the Minnesota River, St. Croix River, Mississippi River, and their tributaries. $500,000 to the Minnesota Valley Trust or its successor for fee title acquisition, $1.5 million to the Trust for Public Land for fee title acquisition, $227,000 to Friends of Mississippi. So the outcomes are restoration of 39 acres, acquisition of 249 acres, of which 175 are fee, 74 are easement, and enhancement of 77 acres. Location is in the 7-county metro area. Personnel, and again, maybe to show an example here, when you've got a little higher restoration work, you have more contracts. We have personnel, 41,000, contracts, 135,000, acquisition, 2.2, of which 202,000 is easement, 2 million is fee, other 18,000. Built liability is 15,000 to 30,000. So you've got leverage of about 700,000 sources from Friends of Mississippi River, National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, Minnesota Valley Trust, Dakota County, about 1.5 million more, or 1.5 more million in anticipated leverage. You've got a variety of other funds, minimal state management trails. So that's the Metro Big Rivers Habitat Program.
Excuse me, Representative Hansen. Mr. Becker, can you clarify that pilt liability on there? It's my, she just says $15,000 to $300,000.
Madam Chair, that's
$30,000. Thanks for that correction.
Next is line 9.5, the accelerated aquatic management area acquisition, 3.4 plus million. The Commissioner of Natural Resources to accelerate land acquisition by fee title and easements to be added to the state aquatic management area system as defined in statute. Restoration 606 acres, acquisition of 384 acres, 239 fee, 145 easement, enhancement of 1,784 acres statewide. Managers the DNR. Personnel, 370,000, contracts, a little over a million, acquisition, 1.595, of which 478 is easement, 1.117 is fee, pilt liability, roughly 8,000, in-hand leverage, 75,000 from the Game and Fish Fund, anticipated leverage, 1.4 million. Source from MinWaters, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Fish Passage Grant, Local Cash Match, and DNR in kind. Last year's appropriation was $5.7 million, of which $739,240 have been committed to date. Next would be the Coldwater River and Stream Restoration Protection and Enhancement, lines 9.24. $1.26 million in fiscal 2011 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for an agreement with Trout Unlimited for its successor to restore, enhance, and protect Coldwater River and stream habitats. So this would restore 15 acres and 4.4 trout stream miles location in Goodhue, Fillmore, Wabasha, Winona, and Dakota counties. The manager is Minnesota Trout Unlimited. Personnel, 51,000. Contract, 271,000. Zero pilt liability. In-kind volunteers, in-hand leverage, about 58,000. And other anticipated leverage, 270,000. Last year's appropriation was a 2.050 million, of which 186,000 have been committed to date. Next is the Dakota County Riparian and Lake Shore Protection Restoration, a little over $2 million to the Department of Natural Resources for an agreement with Dakota County for acquisition of urban and aquatic and associated upland habitat enhancement and restoration. This will be restoring 385 acres, acquiring 704 acres through easement, enhancing 153 acres. Location in Dakota County. Manager would be the Dakota County Land Conservation Program. The budget would be $80,000, contract $60,000, acquisition $1.8 plus million, of which it's all fee, no filt obligation. In-hand leverage, $1.7 million. Dakota County, City of Lakeville, Vermilion Joint Powers Organization. Anticipated leverage, $750,000. Landowner donation, Dakota County and the Vermilion River Joint Power. Last year's appropriation was $1 million. This is supported by the Dakota County Preservation of Water, Open Space, and Natural Areas Farmland Bond. Valley Creek Protection, line 10.18, $1.2 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for agreements to protect, restore, and enhance natural systems of Valley Creek in Washington County. So that would be $838,000 with the Minnesota Land Trust, $218,000 with Washington County, $100,000 with the Delwind Conservancy, $50,000 to Trout Unlimited, and $12,000 to the Valley Branch Watershed District. Outcome would be to acquire 80 acres in easement and one trout stream mile easement, location in Washington County. Managers, Minnesota Land Trust, Washington County, Delwind Conservancy, Trout Unlimited, and the Valley Branch Watershed District. $10,000 in personnel, a little over $1 million in easement, no pilt obligation. The Anoka Sand Plain Restoration Project, and this one I think is an example of more restoration and enhancement. So you see some differences here. There's no acquisition. It will be restoring 1,868 acres and enhancing 51 acres, costing $747,000 to do that. Location, the Anoka Sand Plain in Anoka, Chisago, Isanti, Benton, Washington, Morrison, and Sherburne counties. The manager is Great River Greening. Personnel, 185,000. Contracts, 427,000. In-hand leverage, 246,000 from a variety of sources. Anticipated leverage, over $117,000. No FY10 appropriation. Again, volunteer intensive effort with a variety of folks involved. Next would be the Lower Mississippi River Habitat Restoration, $1 million in 2011 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to accelerate agency programs and cooperative agreements to acquire land in the Root River watershed. 319 acres of outcome of fee acquisition, location in Houston County, Root River watershed. Zero personnel, 78,000 in contracts, 921,000 in acquisition. Pilt liability, a little under 7,000 to about 9,500. In-hand leverage, about 15,000. Anticipated leverage, 30,000. First year of a new program. This is a Southeast Minnesota program. Washington County St. Croix Land Protection on lines 1.21. $1,033,000 to the DNR for an agreement with Washington County to acquire permanent easements to protect habitat associated with the St. Croix River Valley. This would be 235 acres of easement, Washington County, Denmark Township. Zero personnel, zero contracts, The money goes to acquisition of easements, and in-hand leverage is over $4 million in in-hand leverage. It builds upon Washington County's preservation and open space bond initiative. Next is the Outdoor Heritage Conservation Park.
Wait a minute, Representative Hansen. So, we're going to protect 253 acres because we're getting the easement on it. Is that correct? And then we're just going to, that's just going to sit there and be protected?
Madam Chair, maybe both examples in Washington County and Dakota County, you've had local initiatives that have passed bond referendums that have raised the dollars there. This particular one with Washington County as the manager, they would be holding the easement, and so they're going to have that responsibility for the maintenance of the easement.
Madam Chair.
And do we have a time limit on the a time period that they're going to be managing? Mr. Becker?
Madam Chair, these are perpetual easements, and so they're responsible, the counties are responsible for the stewardship in perpetuity. The stewardship being the management.
And these counties think it's really a good deal, then, for the state to be, for the Outdoor Heritage Council to be recommending that the state appropriate money for these easements for protection. Mr. Hansen, Representative Hansen.
Well, Madam Chair, both counties have gone to the voters and the voters have approved these programs. I have particular awareness of the Dakota County program because I co-chaired the bond referendum. And so you've got money that was provided for at the local level that is being matched here at this level. So we've got a little money matching a lot of money. And then speaking for the Dakota County one, because they had a farmland component, they were able to access farmland protection dollars to keep land in agricultural production that was at risk for development. But that's not what's in this bill. I'm just adding that on, that there was a couple purposes in there. So here you have leveraging that's being done for natural area protection through acquisition. And you also have in the Dakota County, you have acquisition by easement to keep land in production. The voters passed that in 2002.
And what kind of habitat will be especially protected in that area?
Madam Chair, generally this is grassland and woodland, and it's important for water quality because it's generally shoreland, or shoreland oriented.
And Representative Wagenius?
Thank you. One of the things that I've been concerned about is when we write the easements, when they're talking about shoreland protection, I haven't seen good examples of legal writing in the easements that actually make sure that there is no runoff from that land that we're protecting into the waters.
Yeah.
Do you have a way of assuring that the easement language is drafted so that you get not only the protection of the habitat that you're talking about, but you actually get protection of that water too by making sure that no gully forms and a whole bunch of stuff is getting into the water, which would be one example.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Becker.
Representative Wagenius, the extent to which we go in terms of becoming involved in the easement itself, as we've written it in this bill, is to have the drafters of the easement and the purchasers of the easement provide that easement to the council. We can use the accomplishment plan to try to do what you're talking about, but I don't think we have a direct authority or approval over the easement itself.
Madam Chair,
Representative Wagenius.
But that's after the fact. And you could, before the fact, require that in each of your easements that is supposed to protect water, that it's specifically in the draft of the easement. And it seems to me that if we are advertising to citizens that we are protecting the waters by buying land, then the easement should really follow through and do what we're telling citizens that it's going to do. I mean, the variety of easements that we have are all over the board. Some of them are really lousy, and Minnesotans aren't getting what they paid for. And some of them are really good. So having some specific standards that so Minnesotans know what they're getting, I think would be helpful before the fact.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Wagenius, I think that's a fine idea, and we'll work on it with staff.
Thank you.
Please continue, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Next is the Conservation Partners, Aldo Hardridge Conservation Partners Grant Program that is $4.386 million in fiscal year 2011 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for, and we have struck the word pilot.
We've already done that.
We've done that.
We did that at the last meet.
To provide competitive matching grants up to $400,000 to local, regional, state, and national organizations. Outcomes provide up to 50 grants of, for restoration, protection, and enhancement. I think we may have some folks here who are prepared to talk about this. Personnel, $175,000. Grants, $4.2 million. Last year's appropriation was $4 million. All restoration and enhancement is done on permanently protected land. Criteria in the appropriation law where the DNR commissioner makes a selection. And then you will see the FY10 grant results in your document here, so you'll see a variety of those. And if we have, if you have some questions on those specifically, if we have someone here. This was where
Representative Wagenius.
And looking at the criteria on page 12, line 12.20, and I've seen this language throughout, so here's probably the last chance I get to ask you about it. It says the Commissioner of Natural Resources must agree to each proposed acquisition of land or interest in land. That's good language. I assume you mean in writing. Is my assumption there correct?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Wagenius, we would expect a paper trail that would include a signature.
I think, Madam Chair, it would be helpful to add in writing to the language as we go through, because I don't want somebody to get into a he said, she said later on down the line. Is that, would that be acceptable?
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, very much so.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, right after that sentence that Representative Wagenius referenced, starting on 12.22, the program shall require a cash match of at least 10% non-state funds. Where did 10% come from? Is there a reason that it's 10%? I believe with bonding bills, we expect a much higher match. Is there a reason it's only 10%?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, if to go back to last year for a little bit, there was actually a subcommittee of the council that made recommendations for the Conservation Partners Grant Program, and in last year's appropriation, that 10% was an in-kind match. One of the changes that was made in this recommendation compared to last year's is that the cash match of 10% rather than an in-kind match. There were discussions about whether that should be higher or not. There were discussions about whether we want to make sure that there's capacity at the local level. But I think Mr. Becker may have some other.
Madam
Mr.
Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Hansen was reaching toward what I was thinking about. Part of the purpose of this program, as the council sees it, is to encourage and increase local conservation capacity and habitat development capacity throughout the state. So the small grants committee discussed the amount of the match for a significant amount of time and felt that 10% was enough to have the small groups have a pecuniary and monetary interest in the project, yet it wouldn't limit participation.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Representative Hansen and Mr. Becker. I have another question in this section. On line 1226, it mentions that these grants would be available for restoration, enhancement, or protection, all three different types of projects. And then down on line 1232 to 1234, it says that criteria would involve public access for hunting and fishing during the open season. Now, in the Constitution, it says that access for hunting and fishing is only required with land that is acquired by fee. This would seem to suggest that we are expanding that to restored or enhanced land. Was that the intent? Is that something that we should try to clarify? I guess I'm looking for your guidance on that.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Morgan. My belief and recollection is the intent was that all other things being equal, public access would be a consideration. Not that they would be a requirement of every project. So some clarification here might be useful.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen, Mr. Becker, Chairman Kilgore, who are the likely candidates to be our conservation partners?
Madam Chair, members, if I may, if you look at the annotated bill, it lists all of the conservation partners from the first year's funding cycle. So they range from, see if I can find a name here. Bill, help me out.
Madam Chair, on page 16, the first item is Okabena Oshita Watershed District. The second partner is the MDHA Rum River Chapter. The third partner, now on page 17, is the Minnesota Waterfowl Association. The next conservation district and on down through the bill. They include local park and recreation authorities, sports persons clubs, soil and water conservation district, Audubon Society, City of Burnsville, in this case, in last year's case, Washington County. So it's a variety of groups, small and large, public and not-profit.
I see. And some of them that are local groups of the large that have are our big partners in previous sections.
Madam Chair, that is a possibility. I think it's true in this FY10 allocation.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Guinness.
Just following on this same page, on your 12.30, you say, consistency with sound conservation science. But on page 16, when you're talking about for all restorations, you say, 1628, best available science. And in the statute, it says current science. I think that must be kind of confusing for folks to have three different definitions. It seems to me, going back to the statute and saying current science would be appropriate. Would you think that would be okay?
Madam Chair, Representative Guinness, I think it's a good idea.
Okay. I think that would be helpful, Madam Chair. We shouldn't have three different definitions in three different spots.
So we think we should use current science?
That's in statute.
Madam Chair, Representative Guinness, I assume current science or current conservation science?
That'd be fine.
Thank you.
Chairman Kilgore, what do you think? You use the word science a lot.
You can pick any adjective you want. It has to be science-based. Madam Chair.
But let's be consistent, huh?
That's correct. Consistency is the key.
Okay. Anything else on our partnership with
Madam Chair, just some of the staff who work with that program are, I don't believe, here today, but it may be of interest to the committee at some time to just have a update on what, how that system works, if you're interested, in a future date.
Since it's no longer a pilot. We're going to see this for a while more, continuing on.
Okay, on to administration, subdivision 6, administration noted. Contract management, $175,000 to Commissioner of Natural Resources. Contract management duties assigned in this section. And that's for execution of agreements, reimbursement, and project oversight. The DNR receives over $33 million of the Outdoor Heritage Fund in this appropriation that must be passed on to third parties. Legislative Coordinating Commission, $600,000 from the legislative is to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for administrative expenses for the LaSalle-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council and for compensation and expense reimbursement of the members. Last year's appropriation was $695,000. Personnel, $327,000. Meeting expenses, 15 meetings, 54,000. Office expenses, 43,500. 25-year planning, 175,000. And I believe you should have in your packets the administration FY10 and FY11. Where are they? Are about to?
Representative Hansen, do you anticipate that? This is going to, in the future, this is going to remain at this high number, $600,000. I thought that at the beginning it was going to be more costly because we were just starting up and this is our second year of startup, but, and we went down a little bit. Do you anticipate that this is going to continue to be in the 600,000 range?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the legislation that authorizes the creation of the council has a 1% administrative cost. So, we anticipate, hopefully, as the economy improves, you're going to have a greater receipt of sales tax dollars that come in. the amount that's appropriated, what the council has done is taken, I'd say, a fairly conservative approach in terms of holding back some of the dollars in reserve, and the appropriations are less than 100%. We did, and I moved in the council recommendations to reduce it to the $600,000, yes, recognizing that we are in a difficult economic time. But I think you will see, as long as the 1% is there, you've got that ability to go up to 1%, and that the council would prepare a budget that would be recommended to the legislature. Obviously, the legislature has the final say on what appropriate expenditures are. Maybe Dr. Kilgore.
Madam Chair, I just want to echo what Representative Hansen said, that is that this appropriation is under the 1%. So when you think about it in terms of running any organization, with administrative expenses at less than 1%, that's a pretty efficient operation, in my opinion. All of us around the table and in this room want great accountability for these dollars. Representative Wagenius talked at the last meeting about monitoring, and we couldn't agree more. It's really important that we demonstrate to ourselves and the public that the outcomes that were promised are in fact delivered. In order to do that, it's going to take people. And I guess, in my opinion, while this, I think, is a very, very small budget relative to the total appropriation, I think that if we want to make sure that we are able to accurately demonstrate our outcomes, we're going to need to make sure that we don't shortchange these activities as we develop more program capacity over time, as more properties are being enhanced, restored, protected, that we can make sure we can talk about what, in fact, has the state gained through this investment.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
I would like to comment about this. It would be my anticipation that all of the things remaining equal, that the budget in future years is the 25-year plan, is in shape, will go down as a percentage, and go down as an actual amount from the $600,000 level. I'm very concerned about making sure that the council and the legislature has all of the resources necessary to do a good job on the 25-year plan. When last we talked, last week, there were great questions from the committee about standards and things like that, and I think that the 25-year planning effort ought to eliminate some of that. I also want to make sure that there's plenty of resources available for evaluation. I think evaluation is a critical component of this program. I don't think that we can responsibly spend the public's money without knowing better what the outcome is of those expenditures and being able to go back and adjust our thinking about the value of specific programs or the way to do programs. Evaluation is critical. So, frankly, I've been rather protective of the administrative budget for that reason. Evaluation is critical. A good 25-year plan is critical.
Thank you. Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may have answered one of my own questions by accident, but the budget paper they handed out, can I ask a question on that?
Yes.
I guess before I ask the question, I'm going to ask you about phones, but where do you guys, is this your budget for, not for meeting, but obviously you must have an office somewhere like LCCMR and staff and that kind of thing, correct?
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Representative Hoff, we're just around the corner in 85.
Okay, and then I guess, Madam Chair, my only question would be on each sheet, on one that's titled Assard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, it's got phones, $3,000, and then phone service, $1,200, and then if you go over to the other sheet, it has phone, $1,000, and network services Quest, $1,000. How come there's four different items for phones?
Madam Chair, Representative Paul.
Mr. Becker.
The first budget that you looked at was the setting up of the office, included the setting up of the office. So included in the phone amount are the phones themselves, things of that sort. The Quest is, I believe, the monthly charge, including long distance.
Madam Chair, that's not $1,000 every month, is it?
Madam Chair, Representative Hollis, that's $1,000 per year.
Yeah. Well, you said monthly. That scared me for a minute. Okay, that's all. I just checked.
You thought they were talking a lot of bottom.
Well, yeah.
Any other questions? Representative Khan.
Madam Chairman, I'm not sure. There was some language I was concerned about, and when it goes, I don't know if this was asked before. If it was, I apologize. On 12.7 to 12.11, do we ever have any discussion about that? This is the language that says Commissioner of Natural Resources does the priorities for organizations that have a superior charter to receive private contributions for local conservation or habitat projects. Did we, first of all, how are those organizations defined? And second of all, what bothers me a little bit about that sentence is that it doesn't seem to have any recognition that there might be a difference in quality of projects. I don't know. I don't mind giving priority to something, but you want it, other things being equal.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Khan. In our last discussion about this, you brought up the fact that where it was placed, that particular sentence was superlative. That is, that it controlled all of the criteria. I think that the resolution at that particular time was that it ought to be relocated so that it is equivalent to the other criteria.
Okay, so what's the reason to do that?
I'm sure I would assume that that's something the committee wants.
Okay.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, we've prepared an amendment which we can bring at the next hearing, but it would take this particular provision and it would add a clause at the start which would say something along the lines of that this is subsidiary to priorities that are otherwise stated in this section and in statute. And then secondly, that would move this language to a later part in the provision. And both of those, both the clause and the placement would then make it clear that other statutory priorities, other priorities in this section come first, subsequent to using those priorities, the commissioner could use this as a criteria. And I can bring that on our next hearing for everyone to look at.
Thanks. I remember thinking about it. I couldn't remember whether I asked it or not. So, sorry to do this.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, Dr. Kilgore, Mr. Becker, on page 14, lines 1 through 8. Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council site visit exception. Can you tell me why that section is in there? Why is it necessary? What's the goal with that section? Please.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Morgan. The short and direct answer to your question is that, as you know, the council operates under the open meeting law. And were we to operate, and this allows us when we're traveling to not operate under the open meeting laws. Were we to operate under the open meeting laws, we would have to make accommodations for people on the bus. It would be a great inconvenience and cost to the public to do it that way. This allows us to travel just as other commissions travel, legislative commissions, that operate under the normal legislative procedures.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Becker. I guess that begs the question, are we opening up a can of worms whereby decisions could be made while traveling on the bus that would be made without public input? Is there a slippery slope argument to be made here? What I guess I have some concerns, but maybe the inconvenience is so great that it's worth making this exception. Can you convince me?
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I think the best convincing would be to have you come on the bus with us.
Touché, Monsieur Pussycat.
It's not a place that's very conducive to decision-making. And besides, staff is there, both staff of the council, staff to the broader legislature. It's not a place to make decisions, do business, or discuss things. We do get information. I wish I could have had you on the bus when Councillor Bilbert from the LCCMR took us up the Cora Ridge and did the geography and geology lesson, provided that kind of information. You would understand that this is a valuable exception to have and that it's not any doing any harm to the public interest.
Has anybody passed this language by Mary Liz Holbert?
Madam Chair, this language was in last year's bill as well and was actually heard in the appropriate committees.
Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The numbers have been sitting in front of me too long, so I found another question. Representative Hansen or Mr. Kilgore, on the first budget sheet, you have a reserve of $213,500. What's that for? Is that still there? Is that money you just didn't use? Or
Madam Chair and Representative House, I'm going to defer that question to Mr. Becker because he has a much more intimate knowledge of the budget and the reserve account.
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, the majority of the reserve, $150,000 of it, is dedicated for the planning effort along with what you see in FY11. We have expended $7,500 of that on a engagement with the MAD group of the Minnesota Management and Budget, the Management Analysis Division. Our experience last year was that to have them engage in a full-fledged planning effort cost somewhere in the vicinity of $5,000, maybe a little bit more, a week for their services. The other large amounts that are involved in there are the council meetings through the end of the fiscal year at $18,000. The balance of the 6 months operating expenses is included in there as well. We also have funding for mapping and geographic information systems to make the public aware of the way the money has been appropriated and used.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative House.
This is a finance committee of sorts, is it not?
Yes, it is a finance committee.
So when we're given financial information, shouldn't we be given all the financial information? $213,500 in reserve, but yet through the end of the fiscal year it is actually spent. Shouldn't it look more like the budget for 10 through 11 rather than, well, we're going to spend $7,500 here and money there, because this, we should have that before it hits the floor. I'm sure Representative Biskins would want to know where the $213,000 is going. I think almost anybody would want to know, and if they're not going to use it, then let's find another project or a lake we can clean up or something. Or a river, a trout stream, or even a Lanesboro Trail. could use that money. But ma'am, I would like them to...
You wouldn't want to raid anybody for that, though.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. No, we wouldn't want to supplant anything that's already going to Lanesboro. But, Madam Chair, I just think we should have that before it hits the floor, if you could make that request of them to actually give us a full budget through the end of June, unless Representative Wagenius's committee maybe has that or something. No? Okay.
It comes to this committee.
Well, I know, but she's raising her hand.
Representative Wagenius.
No, I'm going on to the next subject when this is finished.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, I think the question that Representative Howe has raised is he probably isn't the only one that has those questions. And we've been going through the bill. We haven't really talked about the actions that were taken last year to have the logo and have the website. And speaking for myself, I think ultimately we should have everything available on the web so that whether it's Representative Howe's, he can look up and see what per diem I've been paid for going to the meetings or how much reimbursement anyone is getting. I think put it all out there, every expenditure, get it out there, because if one person's got questions, I'm sure there are others that have questions. And so I'm hopeful that we would get to that point where you can get these, get this information out there. When it gets to the projects are reimbursement based. If there's expenses for members, there's going to be some reimbursements. If there's going to be phone records, whatever, put it all out there and get it on out there. So whether somebody wants to be looking at 3 in the morning and see how much the phone bill is, they have that opportunity and right, just as if they have the chance to look at what is spent for restoration of a prairie in western Minnesota.
Madam Chair,
Representative House.
With all due respect, Representative Hansen, we're sitting in this committee, which is a finance committee. I'm not going to leave here or 9 o'clock tonight, go on the web to try to find out what your budget is, because your budget should be in front of us right now. So I'm just asking that before it hits the floor, we know what that $213,500 is going to be spent on. Or even before it passes out of this committee would even be better, but or finance committee or something.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
We'll provide that information after the
meeting. Thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure who this goes to, the testifiers. I was kind of looking at the budgets that we've gotten here. So you've got a consultant, one for $60,000, and then on the other one it has one for $125,000. What will that consultant be doing?
Mr. Becker.
Chair, Representative Lilly, the $60,000 is an FY10 expenditure that has been extended.
So it's...
Yes, and it was an FY10 expenditure. It employed 3 Minnesota Management and Budget Management Analysis Division staff. It financed 7 meetings, including 5 meetings throughout the state, so there was travel involved, and it included research of all of the existing habitat conservation plans available for use in the public meetings throughout the state. It included writing a report for describing the process used to come up to take to those meetings, used in those meetings, and the results of that process, which was an estimation of what the habitat needs would cost and how many acres of habitat needs there are in each of the 5 sections of Minnesota that the council uses to plan by. And it included policies and issues that need to be addressed to bring conservation to the standard that the local scientists felt was necessary.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Becker. Do you have a copy of this form here? Or? I'm just curious. There's 2 positions in there that just really made me wonder if I made some academic mistakes in my life. There's a term biologist for $194,000. Is that what term biologists make? It's under the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project. And then on the next page, there's a DNR Aquatic Habitat Program Restoration Coordinator for $285,000. That seem like pretty good jobs. But you can get the burn crew. You got a boss, 5 people, 10 weeks, and 2 years for like half that. So, but I just...
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, these figures that are on the blue sheet can be for 1, 2, or 3 years. The $200,000 one, I'm fairly confident, is a 3-year. and that's available in more detail in the accomplishment plan.
Madam Chair and Mr. Becker, that's helpful. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Representative Guinness, it's going down the same page. Is that where we are right now? We had a conversation about lines 14.18 through 20. Talking about in the last meeting that a good restoration can take 4 or 5 years. And so this is not allocating the time for that. So if we were to think about doing different dates, like this date for acquisitions, but putting out the money for restorations for 2 more years, are there any unintended consequences that I'm not thinking about by doing that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lagunas, with your concern about the time it takes to do a good restoration in mind, the 3 years is certainly an incentive to get the money working for the public. But on the other hand, it was not drawn up with your thoughts in mind. I think through the application request for funding process, as well as through the accomplishment plan process, we can keep tabs on the rate of expenditure if you want to make it available for a longer period of time. Our thinking was that we would come back to these programs on a regular basis and continue to give them the capacity to restore and enhance, as well as other things. But I don't think it's a bad idea to do what you're suggesting.
Madam Chair.
Representative Guinness.
I think just for the public to know what they're getting, we don't know what the next legislature is going to do. And that's the problem with coming back and revisiting it. But when we fund a project, make sure it's complete and that we actually have a good restoration. So putting that out maybe an extra year or two, if you think you can track it, I think that is a good idea.
Madam Chair, Representative Guinness, I think we can track it.
Thank you. I think we solved that problem.
It's good to solve problems, isn't it? Any other questions? Continue on, Representative Hansen.
Okay, the availability.
We're almost done.
Almost done. Availability of the appropriation, we were just in 14.9. Accomplishment plans, we talked about that earlier. 14.27. Some discussion about that. A lot of what you're going to see in the remaining pages is, for lack of a better term, boilerplate that we have been using in the previous bill. So project requirements on subdivision 9. The local ecotype language, I believe, is the same language as we've had in the bonding bill before. I think that's been the agreed upon language. the easements discussion as we go on to page 16 with the correction on the best available versus current science. Restoration and management plan. We have the accountability portions on 17. And 18. We've made the correction on 18.7 with the Minnesota Conservation Corps, or the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. Payment conditions. Purchase of recycled and recyclable materials. Accessibility. Land acquisition restrictions. The recycled materials, accessibility, those are been in prior bills. Receipt of funding of the real property. This has that Representative Howes had raised before. Fair market value, how purchases are made, interest in real property, real property interest report by December 1 of each year. The recipient will report to the council. Again, that should get online. Transfers. All those things. So kind of the last few pages are very similar, if not the same, as what we had done last week. And that is the bill.
Representative Kahn?
Okay. Somewhere in the last one, I don't remember, was in the whole legacy bill, or if it was any part of it, we had the issue about mapping. Is there any good language about making sure that all of this was going to be appropriately mapped?
Madam Chair, that language
is... Mr. Becker?
Is that covered this too?
172, yes. My assumption is it's covered this appropriation as well.
Representative Hansen, to start out this last section that was used pretty much boilerplate, you said, and then you used the word ecotype. And you know, over the last few weeks, and people have talked to us a lot about the amounts of times that we've used eco, and we don't want to use that word ecosystem or ecotype or eco. Any ecological or eco. Do you realize that in your bill, Representative Hansen, this eco word connected with some other variation was used over 129 times? It was this weekend was kind of a quiet weekend in North Hermantown. And it was sunny for a while on Saturday, and it was sunny for a while on Sunday, and I just thought, I can't stay in, but I can't waste my time. So I kind of took your bill and went through to see how many times some variation of the word eco was used, and I think I got up to 129 times. So it's kind of a common word then, isn't it?
Madam Chair, I did not know how many times the word eco or ecology was in the bill. But in terms of common usage, maybe this is dating my age, but I can remember the first Earth Day and the word ecology, and ecology being science. And that when we're looking at science, we talk about ecology. We go back to Aldo Leopold, and we have everything is interconnected.
Yeah. I had the big book, and that's what I was using. And so it wasn't just in this bill. There are not that many in this bill. But in the proposals that came before, when these proposals came before you, Chairman Kilgore, did you say, please correct the language and strike out the word eco, whatever it is?
Madam Chair, members of the committee know.
You think you're going to do that in the future?
I can't predict the future, Madam Chair, but I doubt that would be the case if I was still the chair.
You think that word has some meaning to some people?
Madam Chair, members, I think it has a lot of meaning, a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people.
And it has meanings to people that want to restore, and it has meanings to people that want to enhance, and it has meanings to people that want to protect. I know it's in the Constitution. So it's a word that people that aren't on the inside could use and think they were speaking well or speaking scientifically, or maybe not quite that much, but at least that they could be understood if they were going to use those words, wouldn't it? Isn't it? I think it does. And people in North Hermantown on sunny days
thought so too.
Probably wouldn't be abashed if somebody came out and used the word eco-something. I just thought it was kind of fun to see how many variations there were even in that big book, in the white, the notebook with all the proposals in it. And certainly people that are asking for money are using that word or those words or a variation of that word. For what it's worth. Representative Hansen, let's talk about PILT. I think that there's between $103,000 and $185,000 worth of PILT, new PILT money in this bill. Representative Wagenius, were you considering that much new money when you made your appropriation for PILT in your finance bill?
Madam Chair, we cut about $6 million out of DNR in this current biennium. We do carry the PILT account, and we had recommended that it be cut at the same percentage that everything else was cut, but the Senate didn't want to do that, and so the whole matter was shifted to the Tax Committee. And I think the Tax Committee chose not to cut PILT.
I saw Commissioner here, Assistant Commissioner here a little while ago. Is anyone from DNR here? No?
Maybe in the hall.
That can talk to me about PILT?
We had recommended. I pretty much stand.
So if you were cut $6 million,
publicly,
what do you think is going to happen to these recommendations for PILT if this committee affirms the projects in the bill? What's going to happen to PILT in relationship to the possibility that you might be cut $6 million?
Well, that's just happened. That's signed into law.
Madam Chair, my name is Dennis Simon. I'm the Wildlife Management Section Chief for DNR. Madam Chair, if I understood the question correctly, the impact of cutting $6 million of new acquisition would... the PILT obligation for $6 million of new acquisition would be 0.75% of the purchase price.
No. My question was, we're going in this proposal, I believe... The way I read it, there's going to be between $103,000 to $186,000 new dollars of PILT obligations in these recommended projects.
Let me explain it a little bit better.
Representative Mukiyas.
I'm sorry I didn't explain it very well, but the PILT is a general fund expenditure. And it comes under the DNR's bailiwick. We had a $16 billion cut in all of the environmental programs. We were having to do the same cuts that everybody else was doing, no more, no less, just pretty much on average. And I didn't come down here with the number, but we had to cut DNR's general fund appropriation by about that much. We expect that in the next biennium, we're also going to be having to cut general fund appropriations. That's just reality. Does that explain it a little better?
And from what we've heard in testimony on this bill now, from Representative Hansen and the Outdoor Heritage Council, they're recommending anywhere from $103,000 to $186,000 of new PILT liability because of the fiscal appropriations that are in this bill. So I'm saying, how are you going to handle that?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Simons.
It's my understanding that PILT payments are calculated based on formulas of the land that are acquired in various types of ownership, and that if there were cuts in the PILT payment, then it wouldn't affect DNR's budget. It would impact the amount of money going to the counties and to the townships and school districts, and of course affect our relationship with those local units of government.
No.
I don't know. I'm mixed.
Mr. Simon, this committee is going to vote on the recommendations in 2000 House File 2882. And if we're voting for these recommendations, we're assuming that the PILT payments are going to be made for counties and school districts that will be affected, not that they're going to be left holding the bag on them because we cut their the finances. So the PILT has to be part of these recommendations. At least I'm expecting that the representatives here think that the PILT payments have to be made.
Madam Chair, the PILT payments that would be that would be obligated by this appropriation would actually affect state governments in fiscal year 2013.
But Representative Guinness said starting in 2011, 12, and then next year we're going to do 13. How will the money, will that be a top priority then within the DNR to see that the PILT payments for the Outdoor Heritage recommendations are followed up on?
Madam Chair, I can't answer that. As far as I know, and I'm not a PILT expert on the Wildlife Management Section Chief, but as far as I understand, the PILT payments are passed through a general fund through DNR, and we administer the payments to the county. And so whatever the legislature would approve as far as payment rates, we would simply administer that through the department.
I believe Mr. Commissioner Meyer has arrived.
He must have gotten a phone call.
For a text.
Thank you, Mr. Simon.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
Commissioner Commissioner Meyer.
Madam Chair, members, if you could please repeat the question for me. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR.
The question was that we believe, I believe that this proposal commits to a between 103,000 and $186,000 built liability for the projects that we are being asked to vote on. And if we want the projects to assume, or if we believe that our counties and school districts that are affected in the affected areas of these projects will be kept whole on TILT payments, then we want to know that the TILT will be paid. And is that going to be a priority for DNR?
Madam Chair, members, PILT appropriations in 477, the PILT appropriation is an open appropriation. The PILT reduction that was contained in the governor's budget, that was contained in the House budget, was not enacted. So the bill that passed and was signed into law 2.5 weeks ago now fully funds the payment in lieu of taxes program for FY10 and FY11. I cannot answer what happens, nor can I don't think anybody in this room or in these buildings answer what's going to happen in the next biennium, but the department's budget proposal that we submitted to MMB did not contain a payment in lieu of taxes reduction. That was done through the process as the rest of the governor's budget was put together. And as it always happens, the legislature is the one who decides those makes those decisions. All I can tell you for now is the payment in lieu of taxes program is fully funded at the current level. The proposal for FY12-13 remains to be seen what that would be, but that new proposal would include these numbers if this amount of land was acquired. The payment is calculated on a yearly basis, so any acquisitions that were done between now and October of the following year would be taken. It has a year lag, basically. So it's going to be a year before these dollars would be added to the payment in lieu of taxes payment.
Right, and that's Mr. Simon said that we would be dealing with this in 2013. So, Mr. Becker, as we're contemplating, and as we remember what you said earlier today about sometimes that the projects are amended and so forth, if it is our intent that our counties and school districts, cities, or whoever is whatever local government unit should be paid PILT for the projects that you are recommending to us, then when on the year by year basis, if the PILT changed rather than the liability that you listed on our outline for us, if that changed for any project, then you would go back and amend your project?
Madam Chair, no, I don't believe that we wouldn't amend the project. The project will be as it is appropriated by the legislature.
Representative Kahn.
I think the problem is that we're not paying, we're not considering PILT to be a cost of the project. And I think particularly as part of a 25-year plan, I don't know if that's as important for these the first 2 years as we're doing it.
And
but I think it needs...
We can't.
I think we really need to start making the argument that PILT is a cost. If we recognize PILT is an obligation, then it is a cost of the project. And we need to put it into the project. The cycle of how we fund it might be kind of... Somebody might have to figure out a better... financial, you know, a revolving fund to pay the bills or something like that.
And that goes back to our very, one of our very first discussions when the council came before us last year, was that they were assuming that the 3/8 money could not pay for PILT. That's an assumption that they made.
I think that, Madam Chairman, I think that needs to be a legislative determination, and I think we need to, it needs to be determined on the point of that if PILT is required for any acquisition, then how can it not be a cost of the acquisition? And so I think that's something that we need to deal with. Maybe not on this bill, but at least in the future.
Well, this will be the second time where we don't have the actual amount of money for PILT that we're approving projects for. And maybe it's the will of the committee not to pay for PILT. I personally think we should. It should be part of it. And the council has the PILT liability on their own line. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I do think to be responsible, we have to deal with this just because it's not going to go away. And I don't think the communities that are dependent upon it want it. But the other thing that I think we have to wrestle with, and it's next year, and I'm not sure if it's in the Tax Committee's jurisdiction or Representative Wagenius's committee, but the report that we'd gotten said that actually it was the way we calculate it, particularly for new acquisition, has some problems with it as well. And so I think we have to look at this whole issue, but it is potentially a transfer from one budget to another, and I think we need to be honest and transparent about that, and I think it is a cost, just as restoration is a cost.
And that leads us to our summer research project. Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, every time you suggest that, I think to myself, I'm going to have my tax staff come and talk to you.
I always like to work with your tax staff, Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, they like to work with you.
Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Becker, I guess as Chair Murphy said, that the response that we received last year in regard to PILT was that it wasn't considered a part of the cost, or that it couldn't be, or that the legacy funds could not be used for the purposes of paying PILT. I was wondering if that is an official position of the council, or if that position has changed. If not, why is it not considered part of the, things that could be funded through the legacy?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Beacon. Prior to last year's recommendations, we inquired then, being administered in the executive branch, we inquired of the Attorney General's office as to whether or not the fund could be used to pay PILT. I think you all have that letter distributed last year. Our interpretation of their response, which was not a formal opinion, was that as currently structured, the fund, as PILT is currently structured, the fund could not be used to pay for PILT for a couple of reasons, and I don't recall the letter in minute detail, but one of the reasons had to do with the uses to which the PILT limit is put by the counties, but those uses weren't constitutional uses of the fund. You can take that however you want to take it. The other, and more interesting to me, point that was made was that there is a standing appropriation for Phillips. And in order to pay for that PILT with outdoor heritage funds, you would have to, in essence, limit or turn down the amount of money coming into the out of the general fund to pay PILT. So that question of substitution came up and traditional sources came up. So those were the two things that I recall in that letter that were of interest.
Okay. Madam Chair.
And
thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Becker. And it seems to me, you know, as far as the structure, you're talking about the money going to the counties and being, or to the cities or what have you, being used for purposes that aren't directly associated with the constitutional purposes. But isn't that also the case when you're purchasing property? You're purchasing property from individuals and from entities that they're going to be using those monies for purposes that are not directly related to the constitutional purposes as well. It seems to me to be in that same, it'd be, you know, that would be a similar argument for the PILT payments. And as far as the substitution, it seems if you're adding PILT payments that it's not a substitution at that point. If you have a response.
Chair, Representative Eakin, I'm the messenger. This is the recollection of what the Attorney General said. I think that the first rebuttal or response was an excellent response. The second one I'm less enamored with personally, because you have to take an action to stop that statutory appropriation. So you would have to somehow limit what's currently in statute, I think, and then put the Outdoor Heritage Fund money in the place of what has been statutorily appropriated. So that's a bit more peculiar situation. Why would the Outdoor Heritage Fund have to pay PILT when the Fish and Game Fund doesn't have to pay PILT? Why would the Outdoor Heritage Fund have to pay PILT when the other funds that acquire lands don't have to pay PILT? Those are questions that just come to mind as I lay awake at night and think about this issue.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, if I'm hearing all of this, the way I see PILT is sort of like LGA. It's state taxpayers helping local government. And we're cutting LGA. We cut it last year. We cut it this year. We're cutting everything. We're cutting corrections. And if I understood Representative Wagenius correctly, though she proposed a cut in PILT, it is not going to happen because, of course, we have a privileged interest group that is going to protect it. And so if I look at this correctly and see if we approve this and this is a PILT liability of this amount and this is a PILT liability and it's not going to be covered in those expenses, it will have to be taken from the general fund, which means we will then have to cut education and health care and nursing homes and corrections and whatever. We have to nick them all because PILT, which is not to be cut, which is sacred, has to be paid. And in a year when we're cutting everything, we have to take it from all those other things. That's how I am, as I've listened to this conversation, that's kind of how I hear it. Now, am I wrong somewhere?
That's
Madam Chair, as a Northern representative, I could make a comment on that.
Well, yeah. Representative Torkelson had his hand up first.
Okay.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, as I think about this PILT issue, it really, I think about the fact that all of these purchases, or not purchases and some of the other actions that this committee takes, are encumbering the state of Minnesota with future obligations, whether it be PILT taxes or the maintenance of property in the future, as these habitats need to be maintained over for perpetuity in some cases.
But because of these supplemental funds, we are encumbering the state of Minnesota's general budget with future expenses that will be ongoing. And because it's supplemental, it seems to me that it's appropriate that somehow we recognize these expenditures as we move on to the future. I guess my question to the testifiers is, at what point do you quit looking at these projects as belonging to your committee and hand them off to the state of Minnesota for the state to take care of?
I can
answer, Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, I think one of the complexities of this is that the constitutional amendment is for 25 years. And so the obligations will go on beyond the life of the constitutional amendment, depending on whether it goes back to the voters or not. This constitutional piece is here for 25 years, and the dollars that it creates, as we're currently doing those, will be expended. So you have an obligation that will occur beyond that. Will the council be here in 25 years, or in year 26, for the fund? Because of the way that it's written. So you are correct in that there are ongoing obligations here, and that the legislature is making those appropriations in a budget year. I think this is the crux of the matter that's been the challenge since the bill was, or the constitutional amendment passed. How do you take care of some of these ongoing obligations? But you have a term, limited term of 25 years that the constitutional amendment is there.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess I take that as an answer to my question that you're not considering any of these future obligations as you make these purchases and sign these easements.
Madam
Mr. Becker.
Chair, Representative Torkelson, quite the contrary, it's the reason that we bring the number to you, is in order to consider it.
Then the question is, at what point? So at the end of 25 years, then, is when you're going to quit worrying about these projects? Or?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, that may be the question. It might be how one goes about taking care of
them. He can't lie awake for 25 years.
Well, I'm hoping I can.
Representative Torkelson.
Just one. Yes. Well, I guess that really is kind of the crux of this, and to try to transfer it to the general budget situation that we're in now is maybe appropriate, but I don't think so. I think we have to look longer term on this and figure out, you know, in good years and bad years, we're going to have these extra expenses that are going to be encumbered upon the state of Minnesota and its general budget, and we're setting precedent here for the next 25 years and possibly longer, and I think it's important that we wrestle with this question, and maybe we all need to lay awake at night a little bit. That was a comment.
Or at least in June and July. Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman, I would gladly trade you our PILT payments for your property tax receipts and then gladly take your LGA cuts.
I'd probably rather pay your property taxes than pay my property taxes.
Part of that may be true, Madam Chair, Representative Hausman. It's just that when you have so much property that you simply cannot collect property tax on, but yet you still have to put out fires, you still have to take care of things, and we're getting what, $1.92 an acre, and it's just different. We have no ability to get anything back from the land that is owned by the federal government or the state government, and it is sacred, yes, but I think we'd much rather take the LGA cuts if we could take the value of that land and charge property tax on it.
I'm not willing to trade.
I want to keep the land. I just want to trade to get the money.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In reading the Constitution, it says the dedicated money under this section must supplement traditional sources of funding for these purposes and may not be used as a substitute, but it seems to me that in this proposal, the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council is substituting money out of the general fund into their recommendation. So it says we can't substitute. Does that go both ways, Madam Chair?
Hmm.
because it's clearly a substitution.
That's what we have to find an answer for.
Oh, we get to make the rules.
Before the next round.
Oh, okay. I mean, yeah. Couldn't that be argued? It could be substitution both ways, and they're not supposed to substitute?
I don't think it says both ways.
He's asking the question. Representative Davis, that's something that we have to contemplate. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I don't want us to get in the position of having old arguments about PILT. I want us to do a problem solving here, because I would agree that Representative Torkelson has laid out the problem correctly. So we do not have to do PILT payments the same way we've always done them. I think that you bring up the danger, Mr. Becker, that we would be putting money from the Heritage Fund into the PILT pot, and it could be viewed as substituting. Well, if we only had payments, not called PILT, but payments for the new properties, I don't think you run into that problem at all. So each new property that came along, if there were a payment to the county and the school district, I'm just saying county as the grouping, and it was a direct payment up front, then you wouldn't have to worry about your second problem of what happens when the Heritage Council goes away or this fund goes away. If we've come to an agreement of an upfront payment that is a cost of doing business, I think we don't run into constitutional problems, and we solve some of the practical problems by just having the same big picture outcome, just doing it differently. Does that make sense to you?
Similar to what was in the House proposal last year.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm talking about the House proposal of last year.
Because which I think was unacceptable because I don't know why. Because it was the House proposal, I think.
Could have been, Madam Chair, but I think I think what we're looking for is things that avoid the substitution, which we can do, avoid the old arguments, which we can do, and avoid the problems that Representative Torkelson brings up. There are always more, as my grandmother said, there's always more than one way to skin a rabbit.
I remember that. Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, I think, and it's beyond, I think it's beyond the scope of this committee, but I think we have an issue about PILT payments in general. Should that be an open appropriation? Shouldn't the same arguments apply to the Game and Fish Fund and so forth? So I think that's and also the problems that came up, was that the legislative auditor's report that picked up the problems until, I mean, it's a whole set of problems that need to be solved, and this committee is part of it, but not the whole issue.
But this committee can do something about it through our summer research project with Mr. McCormick's fine staff.
Can I follow up one more?
One more.
Okay. I failed to mention that I don't want you staying up nights thinking about this. I think the fact that we had this big pot of money instead of these little pots of money have made us think about PILT or an alternative to PILT. But if we come up with an alternative to PILT, surely it should apply to the Game and Fish Fund, and surely it should be applied to the lottery dollars. Not separating you guys out, but you've just kind of brought up the issue because you're dealing with so much money.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As we're talking about summer projects and opportunities to continue to sort of explore and plan, I think we need to acknowledge that the budget that's presented to us has $125,000 for a 25-year planning consultant and $45,000 for project evaluation. And I was glad to hear Mr. Becker say that evaluation is really important to him, because it's really near and dear to my heart. I don't know that evaluation amount is enough to make the kind of difference that I think we need to, as we're establishing our track record of accountability to the public. And I would really encourage you to see if you can nibble away at some of these other expenditures in order to have a robust planning on that. And I'm hoping that that means that you'll have resources and that we'll have resources that can work in partnership with Mr. McCormick and his staff on exploring some of these issues, because I think this fund, more than the others, has the potential to create long-term obligations for the state that exceed the 25 years given to us by the voters. And while I'm hopeful that we'll have enough evaluation results and accountability that they will joyfully renew this in 25 years, we have to lay that groundwork now. And clearly, what we put in our plan should actually have as one of those measures as we go along. What is the cumulative new obligations year to year that this is taking on? And that should be a decision point as well, as to how much can we over time keep shifting either onto other budgets or in other obligations. And there's things I don't know anything about, but I know there's bright and smart people in DNR and elsewhere in the scientific community that can tell us, like, once we have something restored, I have no idea what a maintenance budget is, or if it's kind of one of those things that things creep back and you have to kind of figure out that there's a five-year reevaluation, updating a process. I'm not sure, but I'm hoping that planning will take that into account. And my last request is that as you're looking at how you're going to use that $170,000, or if you can squeeze it more, into helping us and your members sort of envision the future, that you will very seriously look at and consider the principles and outcomes that we put a lot of energy into, because that has some very specific, I think, measures that aren't reflected in what Representative Hansen referred to as the boilerplate, where he said we kind of took what we'd used last year. And I think we should start continuing that dialogue about what we as legislators feel we're hearing from the public in terms of measures and outcomes that they would like to have reports back on, and those that your members do. And hopefully that will be integrated into the result that we see of this investment. Can we anticipate some progress reports as this rolls out with this 25-year planning consultant and the evaluation? I don't know if the evaluation is going to be done by the same person or the firm. Sometimes it's nice to knit those things together. But is there some progress reports or check-in points that we might anticipate having some as the year goes through, Mr. Becker?
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, yes. We have a schedule laid out for the council that includes meetings through November, when the plan is to be before the council and finally, hopefully, accepted. We'll tie this committee into those points and bring either in writing or in person reports back to you as to where we are. The first milestone is the development of the planning process, which is underway in the next couple of weeks. We ought to be able to see drafts of that. The council, may the 25th or 26th, will have the planning process before it for final approval. And we can hopefully kick it off on June 3rd, the next stage.
Madam Chair,
and
Mr. Becker, maybe some might take this as too forward, but just as we did in developing our guidelines and principles and outcomes, invited all to have input and suggest alternatives and or gaps as it evolved, I hope that there'll be opportunities to have, you know, review and comment before things are finalized. I think it's always easier to form a partnership when there's been opportunity for input, whether it's taken or not, before things are finalized, and then it becomes more difficult, I think.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler would be happy to build in to the public review and input and review, I should say, special considerations or due considerations for the legislative branch as a whole.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think as we think through this, it may be just $100,000 to $125,000 today, the way this is set up, but you start compounding that over 25 years, and I think Rep. Hausman's concerns are very, very valid, and we had better figure out a way where this can be self-sustaining. I never thought it was part of the deal to have these funds be taking money away from nursing homes and patrolmen on the streets and education, those types of things. I think this is something that is only going to get worse if you just take a compounding effect over 25 years, because next year and then the next year we'll be coming back for more and more land purchases, and this thing just gets bigger. And we had better find out a way to have some language to have this Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council take care of themselves and not be going after general fund money.
Commissioner Meyer, thank you for coming and clarifying for us. Coming back. We appreciate it. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure who this goes to exactly, but earlier we were talking about some of the RIM dollars and the matching money, and of course that very much appeals to me and others here at the table as far as power of the dollar and how much more we can get out of it. Was there other projects that that we had this opportunity? It was my understanding that there was an opportunity in the St. Louis River, and for some reason we chose not to do that. And what was the return that was possible on those dollars? And then why, I think it was something with Trouts Unlimited or something, but why would we pass on that project? It sounded like something. Do we have numbers also? Could I maybe get some specifics on that?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, well, we're getting the packet together. I think in your packets you will have a FY 2011 allocation worksheet. There should be two legal size sheets that are available. And the first one has the bar through the middle of it, the shaded area. And that shows the projects that were in the response to the request for proposal, you had a selection of projects to come forward and make presentation. And so the sheet that has the shaded bar in the middle has the projects, and you can see the project, the manager, the organization, the fund request, the number of council members that recommended an allocation. So for example, on Reinvest Minnesota, you have 12. The overall average, the council allocation, and then some comments. If you flip over that sheet, you will see a lightly shaded bar between the Washington County St. Croix River Land Protection Project and the restoring fish and wildlife populations in the lower St. Louis River. So there's a cut line there. How do those numbers come from that? I would refer you to the second sheet, the legal size paper, and you can see the individual council members' allocations per project. And to answer the question, for the dollars that would be available, maybe Mr. Becker has the amount.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, I'm looking at the proposal that the St. Louis River Group turned in. We have copies if you all are interested in them. But in describing the leverage, they said that they thought that they would be able to get $2.5 million from the clean water funding, constitutional funding, $2.7 million from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, and $7,000 from Minnesota DNR Fisheries In-Kind Service in fiscal year 11. So that's a total in fiscal year 11 of $5,207,000 of state and federal match for this project.
Madam Chair, So I guess the first question is why, Mr. Becker, why didn't you fund it or choose it? And then I guess I'm looking at the one with the bar that he talked about, Representative Hansen, and it looks like a $2 for every $1 match. So if we were to fund the $3 million request here, then we would have had additional $6 million, or is that, you know, I'm just kind of curious. So why, and then I just kind of want a number, just from this deal here, right here. I don't know if you're, not all the other clean water, just right here.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, if you look at the ask from the Outdoor Heritage Fund was $2.971 million. Six council members appropriated or allocated some dollars for it, and the average of those, when you take it into 12, there was an allocation of $936,833. And so the question of why, if you look at the bar, the cut line is you had everything above the cut line had a majority of it, had at least seven or more council members allocating dollars. Everything below the cut line had less, or six or less, so it didn't have a majority. And if that, maybe Dr. Kilgore, but I think that was the establishment of the cut line.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just real.
Representative Lilly.
And Representative Hansen. So just help me, and I see the bar and I get all that, so, but had they done it, we could have got additional $6 million, yes or no?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, that it would have been dependent, the yes or no is it would have been dependent on the Clean Water Fund if this committee had appropriated money from the Clean Water Fund, but there was significant federal money available. There was just a press conference last week about additional dollars for the Great Lakes restoration, and the St. Louis River was indicated as an area of concern in that very large Great Lakes. So I can't give you a yes or no because it would have been dependent, I think, in the data that was provided to the council. They were looking for a $2.5 million from the Clean Water Fund, but there was $2.7 million, my understanding, on the table from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative.
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, and the note with the 2.7 is that an application has been submitted to reduce the constitutional funding request by $50,000, which I took and take to mean that if they got the full 2.7, there would be a reduction in the 2.9 request. The project without Outdoor Heritage Funds was ranked, and it missed the cut by one federal cut by one place. We don't know what would have happened had the state money been there.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair, and so thank you. Just a little frustrating because I just hate to leave some of that money on the table, and it sounds like a worthy project. I plan to support your project, as others have said along the way. I just want to throw out another thought, and I've kind of mentioned it as I've talked. You know, you've got your nice bar graph, and where did I lose it? Oh, this one here. Got paper all over the place. Just wearing my metro urban hat for a second. You know, we've got 33% that's going to water. We've got 14.25 going to parks and trails. We've got 19.75 going to arts and culture, and 33% going to these projects. And I just again want to remind you that we in the metro. And I know your bar graph shows that you do have metro, but it's. I would argue that you have a little different definition of what metro is. I mean, say you hop in your car and you drive towards Stillwater, and all of a sudden you can just feel it happen, and I don't know how you define in terms, but it's still metro, but all of a sudden it becomes rural, and you can just kind of feel when it happens. It's still Washington County, it's still in that seven county, but something happens. So I just hope in the future that you realize that there's folks in the metro that want to, probably can't shoot things, but we want to fish. So we have a lot of folks that want to fish in the urban center. So say like Representative Loeffler's district or Phyllis Kahn's, or that might want to fish, or you know, maybe we can figure out some new kind of gun that we can shoot all the turkey we have or something. But there's quite a bit of wildlife, and I guess I'd like to hope you'd consider more in the urban in the future. And I know you've made efforts, and I don't plan to cause any problems here now, and but just as we go down the road, that's all I'm asking, just again. Thank you.
See those turkeys walking along the side of the road. Chairman Kilgore, how do you do that when these projects all come in? How do you make your choices for what metro projects get recommended?
Well, Madam Chair and members, as we talked about at the last meeting, we have a multi-stage process where we put out a call, we lay out some minimum criteria, we lay out statewide and habitat section specific criteria. When we receive the proposals, we ask council members to look at each one of them and make a judgment about whether or not they meet the minimum and the priority criteria. From that, we come up with a shorter list, this list. We have the presenters come in. We have questions just as we've had this afternoon from every project. After that's done, we talk about the program, the proposals that are before us. We have members then individually allocate the amount of money that we have laid out. Those that have received some funding recommendation by a majority of the council members, that would be seven, are included on the line. But that's not the end of the process. Once that occurs, that's just the beginning. Then as a council, we sit just as you do around the table, and we talk about those that have high support, those that are below the line, like the Knowlton Creek, and opportunities for council members. In fact, that happens at every, in the 2 years we've done that, where proposals have been either proposed by a council member after several significant discussion about reconsidering it or whatever that might be. And so the process has a formality to it in terms of making sure it meets minimum criteria and the priority habitat criteria, but and ranking. But then after that, the council spends the majority of its time just talking about the list and making sure we're comfortable with proposals, and then entertaining more formal motions to move projects up or to change allocations that we've made. That's the process.
And it is possible that a program, that one project might be higher, rated higher than the cut line, and still not be appropriated.
Madam Chair, that's possible.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Becker.
Once the initial recommendations are made, we ask the individual program managers to come back with a draft action plan. That's then summarized by staff, by region, ecological section, things of that sort, by the constitutional protect, restore, and enhance, and brought back in front of the council to look for balance. Balance is a difficult thing to define in this particular case. I'm having handed out the major tool used to develop some balance, and that's the mission statement, the statewide priority, and importantly, the ecological section vision and priorities. This is from our call for requests, but it was used throughout the process and has specific things that we were trying to do in the metro area. I want to reiterate something I said last time we were together, and that is the requirement that the council plan by section based on the ecological sections drafted by the Department of Natural Resources really begins to put some rigor into this question of balance. And you can begin to see where your money is going, and begin to form a sense of cooperative sense of whether the distribution is correct. So I thought it would be important for you all to understand that we do come back and look at it after recommendations when we have the data, and that we have a guiding document to try to get the balance right.
That's good. Thank you, Representative Guinness.
Thank you. Just on another, as in choosing programs, in the last session, I asked about how your process relates to, in acquisition, relates to the lands that DNR has tagged as we would like to have these lands for aquatic management or WMAs, and I was particularly interested in the SNAs because the DNR list there is extremely long. And so, Mr. Becker, you did respond by sending me a little chart that says that 300 acres of SNA will be acquired under this program. But I have an additional question. I appreciate the response, but there are two issues here. One, does that make the DNR list any shorter this year? And two, members, and I think we've talked about this list before, the list of acres that DNR has is 12,430 acres. And it is their longest and most expensive list because nobody's been working on it. And that concerns me greatly because if our outcome in the long run is to protect prairies in particular, because they have so little of them, it's the DNR list of SNAs that has the prairies on it. And so as you're doing your long-term plan, I know that won't be for this year, but as you're doing your long-term plan and the outcome for 25 years, and Minnesotans say, well, did you guys protect the prairies in the end? Do we have prairies? Or have they been kind of overrun? And because we could lose them very easily. I hope that is part of your plan coming up. Probably not a question for Mr. Becker, but he gave me the information for Dr. Kilgore. In 25 years, will Minnesotans have prairies?
Dr. Kilgore.
Madam Chair, members, I wish I could give you that answer with certainty. I can tell you that, as you well know, we have very few remaining acres of private native prairie left. Under 100,000 acres is the best guess. It is a priority, if you look at our section priorities, to protect those, as many of those as possible, and of course to maintain the ones we have in good quality and diverse habitat. Not all the landowners who own those roughly 100,000 acres of native prairie that's remaining are going to be willing sellers. We know that for a fact. But it is certainly, as a council, a priority for us to try and capture and protect those remaining remnants, which is becoming continues to become a vanishing, you know, element of our landscape.
Representative Guinness.
But it didn't happen particularly this year. And so I am asking, as DNR does have a list of SNAs, many of them huntable, I'm sure, that have a list of prairies on them that should be protected. And I'm hoping that the council will look at that list as it's doing its long-term planning. Could I expect that? Could we expect that in Minnesota?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Guinness, I'll add it to my list of things we're going to do. But no, it's a reasonable and good idea to take a look at the work that others have done in terms of trying to figure out where the state should go, the state as a whole, not the council, not this committee, but the state as a whole should go in terms of resource protection. And a lot of that information sits in those lists. and we need to get those out in front of the council in its planning.
Sits in those what?
Sorry, lists.
Thank you. Representative Hansen in the, or Mr. Becker, Chairman Kilgore, in the accomplishment plans that you discussed yesterday or whatever day it was and today, what happens if a group doesn't accomplish what they set out to do after they've been awarded some funding?
Madam Chair, that's taken into consideration the next time they apply.
Is there any way to get the money back?
Madam Chair, it depends on how they didn't meet the promised accomplishments. For example, if the cost of, say, grassland restoration and enhancement, burning, or for some reason to suddenly go up, we would expect that their program's accomplishments in that area might go down, and it might be reasonable. But if they just fail to do the job, it is on a reimbursable basis, so they won't get paid until they produce the product. If it's a divisible product, they may produce parts of it.
And then you have a notation on their name or something that says, "Do not do this again with them." Permanent record, yes.
Madam Chair, there's an indelible record.
And it's keeping you up at night, right?
Madam Chair, as long as he's up, he might as well think.
That's column C in our spreadsheet. If you have an asterisk, you got a problem.
Okay. Yeah. All right. No gold stars. Anything else? Any concluding remarks, Representative Hansen?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for a very thorough vetting of the House Bill 2882. I think it's an example of the due diligence that is required when we're spending large amounts or any amount of the public's money. So I appreciate your questions, and I did not indicate that Councilmember Darby Nelson is here, and I wanted to recognize him as well, but on behalf of Mr. Becker and Dr. Kilgore, thank you for the time that you've shown and the questions.
Well, we know the bill better than we did when we started out, that's for sure. And we know it better than we knew the bill last year, too. Before we go on, though, Representative Morgan, on March 24th, I believe it was, we adopted... This committee adopted the legislative guide as you finally proposed it to us without change. And is there anything in that legislative guide that suggests that we are taking money from the Outdoor Heritage Council Fund and putting it into trails and parks?
Madam Chair, the short answer would be no. A slightly longer answer would be that there is no appropriation at all whatsoever in the legislative guide. It's a guide. It's a guide of principles and outcomes that we as a committee agreed to, and the appropriations come in bills like Representative Hansen's and the bill we did last year. So absolutely not, Madam Chair.
So the suggestion that maybe we are raiding the fund, one fund, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, to place money in another fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, is not recommended in the legislative guide, and no funds are recommended, no appropriations are recommended from or to any fund in the legislative guide?
Madam Chair, there are no appropriations, no recommendations for appropriations, and no rating in the legislative guide.
I like that. Thank you. Representative Hansen, we are going to hold this bill over, and I think on Wednesday, if not before, we are going to have a proposed committee bill, a bill for the committee, committee bill, of which the Outdoor Heritage recommendations will be in, the Clean Water recommendations, and the Wikimedia's bill that she talked about the other day will be in, and I think there will be some amendments based on the discussion that took place of some things that had to be cleared up on, and as Mr. McCormick suggested earlier on, the placement of some of the items that we brought to your attention. And then we will have discussion, and we will have people that want to testify may come forth and testify. If they sign up with Ms. Anton before the meeting, and committee members, if you have, based on our discussions of the other day, of Wednesday and today, if you have any amendments to propose, I would appreciate receiving them as soon as possible. Representative Davids?
Madam Chair, I would move the minutes of April 7th.
As printed? Okay. All in favor of the adoption of the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is prevails. Is there any more business to come before us?
Madam Chair.
This time, Representative Hansen.
Are we meeting tomorrow?
Maybe, maybe not. I have to discuss. I have to find out what happened this morning. And I have to, we changed the time of the meeting from 1 o'clock to after session. But I don't know what time session will be done either. So, but that didn't have anything to do with the Outdoor Heritage Council or the Clean Water Fund or the Parks and Trails Fund or the Arts Fund. That had to do with ice hockey. So we will maybe have to find another time for that. But we'll see. Anything else? If not, this meeting is adjourned.